across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don Rue, and welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, September 6th, National Coffee Ice Cream Day, National Fight Procrastination Day, National Read a Book Day. Coming up this hour, the real cost of voucher schools. Over the years, what started as a small experimental program just in Milwaukee has metastasized to the point where Wisconsin taxpayers are funding two parallel school systems. We'll examine the real cost of the voucher schools program, not only from the standpoint of dollars, but of dignity as well, with a couple of guests coming up in just a few minutes. We'll also visit later this hour with Todd Alba, telling us what's on his show coming up from 1 to 3 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Speaking of Civic Media, you'll find them on the web at civicmedia.us, and from there you can listen to any show. You can learn about all of the stations that Civic Media has put out there across Wisconsin, the shows, the schedules. You can then listen back to past episodes of shows, including Up North News Radio. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but we appreciate being able to partner up for 2 hours every morning and bring you some of Wisconsin's headlines. Up North News also puts out a daily newsletter. You can sign up for that at upnorthnewswi.com. Among today's stories is an article from me about a program called Live Today, Put It Away. It's all about the growing number of gun shop owners who are offering a potentially life-saving alternative. If somebody feels like they're in a position of deep depression, that they may cause some kind of harm, that they can bring their guns in, no questions asked. They will be stored. And when they feel the time is appropriate, they can come back. In both cases, they have to bring a close family member or friend with them and then have the guns back. Essentially, it's a red flag law on yourself. It is not a substitute for the red flag laws that are so badly needed in Wisconsin and across the country, but it is a step that some gun shop owners are taking to provide that opportunity for people who would like to just get their own guns out of their house for a little while. So you can read about that in our newsletter as well. And you can subscribe again at upnorthnewswi.com. We were talking in the last hour with Melissa Baldoff, and she and Joe Zepecki and family, they were traveling last week, and they got stranded in an airport, or at least not in the airport itself. They were able to get a nearby hotel for nearly 24 hours. And I related how that same thing had happened back in March, you may recall, coming back from a vacation. And I have been admittedly rather skittish about air travel, not from a safety standpoint. I'm not, you know, afraid to fly or anything like that. I'm just talking from the standpoint of being stranded, the standpoint of being price gouged, the prospect of being separated from my luggage, which has happened. And, you know, so I'm just more hesitant all the time about it. And what didn't help yesterday was when United Airlines was ground to a halt across the entire system. A ground stop that lasted just a little over an hour because of a software update that none of United's computers were working or talking to each other, and they couldn't find out any information. So they declared a ground stop, which means that the flights that are already up, they just continue on to their regular destination. But the ones that were scheduled to depart don't depart. And so the entire United Airlines timetable was, you know, well over an hour off. Goodness knows what that did to people with connecting flight plans and everything else. My wife and I heard this, and the first thing we thought of was ransomware, because ransomware attacks have become just out of control in this country. United did not say that. They again said it was a software update. But it is, again, one of those reminders of how our lives, how our travel is tied to technology that we have basically no control over. Again, not to say we shouldn't fly, not to say that we shouldn't have some concerns, but when you see these things, you go, do we want to do that? I've got some time off coming up here in a couple of weeks, going out to see our daughter out in the mountains of Idaho. And we have flown there previously. You stop in Denver, and then you take a regional flight, you know, into Idaho Falls. But other times we've driven, and we're driving this one, in part because, honestly, you'd think, Aaron, that the drive across North Dakota and Montana would be, you know, long and boring. It is long, but it's actually quite beautiful. We actually really do enjoy that drive out across the prairies, the plains, the mountains. And so we're going to be doing that in part because we really like the drive, but also there is just not a level of trust with the airlines these days.
That's fair enough. You know, I haven't made that drive myself, but maybe I'll have to.
It is really nice. You know, we've also driven out to, you know, the Black Hills of South Dakota. So it's kind of, you know, and the Badlands extend all the way up into North Dakota. And it is just beautiful. At 7:12 right now, so right before we head into our next commercial break, I have to ask, you're with a potential new producer here by the name of Sam. He's off screen now again. Did he? Okay, he's still there. I just want to make sure.
He has not run screaming yet.
Nor has he flunked the audition. Okay, this is good news.
Given that it is National Put Off Procrastination Day, maybe he'll get to that tomorrow.
Yeah. I like that you've got your own laugh track ready to go. We should all be so fortunate as to have a laugh track at our fingertips the way that Aaron does. All right, go. Okay, continue keeping Sam occupied and well-trained there, and we will come back, talk to Dr. Julie Underwood about the real cost of voucher schools in Wisconsin. That's coming up right after this break, and our weatherology forecast and a Brewers update, too. You're up north. As I mentioned earlier during today's history lesson and music break, Nina Persson, lead singer for the Cardigans, is 49 years old today, born this day in 1974, in a city in Sweden that I could not possibly pronounce, so will not even try. It is 68 degrees in Lake Wissota right now, 72 in Madison and Waukesha. La Crosse coming in at 73, Wausau at 70 degrees, as is Wisconsin Rapids, Hayward 65, Ashland 66, and I'm saying it in a nice normal tone of voice. However, Jennifer Wojcicki is here from Weatherology, and it's all I can do not to gush as almost embarrassingly as I did at the top of the show in our last hour, Jen, because, I mean, to be able to throw open the windows, open up the doors, it was just glorious. There's just no other way to put it. It feels so good this morning, doesn't it?
It really does. I completely agree. Definitely over the heat, and just having the windows open makes it feel a lot nicer and definitely more like fall coming in here. So not quite done with summer yet, but it definitely is going to feel quite a bit more like fall, cooling down a bit today as that cold front comes through. At least a slight chance for some showers and storms for all. Highs kind of all over the board today. Mid to low 80s for southern Wisconsin, mid 70s from Madison to Richland Center and up towards central Wisconsin. Then mid to low 60s around Baldwin and Amory, as that's where the cold front will have fully gone through today. Thursday, a bit of cloud cover for all. Slight chance for rain in the morning hours around Milwaukee, otherwise dry for everyone else. Highs in the mid to upper 60s for most, low 70s for southwestern Wisconsin. Friday, sunny skies for nearly everyone. A bit more cloud cover along Lake Michigan. A below average day for all with highs in the mid to low 70s for most. A little cooler in the upper 60s around Oshkosh and Waukesha. And then for the weekend, sunny skies expected across the board for Saturday. Highs in the mid to upper 70s mostly, which is pretty average. A few outliers, though. Low 80s expected around Richland Center. Our cool spot around Oshkosh in the low 70s. Then Sunday cooling down a little bit for west central into central Wisconsin as another cold front begins to push through. Highs into the low 70s and upper 60s with a chance for showers and storms around Amory and Baldwin. Otherwise, highs expected to be pretty similar for Sunday to Saturday for the southern half of the state. Sunny skies from Milwaukee to Madison, then just a little bit more cloud cover for southwestern Wisconsin.
And between the Badgers playing, the football team playing Saturday night, and then the Packers kicking off their season Sunday afternoon, not a bad thing to no longer have the summer heat, have it feel a little more autumnal, shall we say, Jen. Thank you so much. Appreciate the update.
No problem.
All right. Have a great day. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology with us there. Now Julie Underwood is with us, and Julie's worn many hats over the years here when it comes to education. Dean Emeritus from the University of Wisconsin, Madison School of Education, and has worked for all kinds of public school advocacy groups in, you know, making sure that we do that thing that we liked doing for the first century and a half of the state, mm-hmm. and that is having a strong public school system before certain parties began to undermine it. Julie Underwood, welcome. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on this morning. And actually, thanks for your support for public education. You do a great job of telling the story, and we appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And look, for some reason, for some people, there are various reasons, and we'll cover some of them, whether it's philosophical, whether private and religious schools should be getting money. But let me start just from the straight dollars and cents perspective, because as I said at the top of the hour, it was once a small experimental program in Milwaukee, but it sure feels like the taxpayers are now funding two parallel school systems. Is there a way to quantify the taxpayer cost of the voucher school program expansion in Wisconsin?
Sure. You just look at the tax dollars that are spent. You know, as you say, this started out as a Milwaukee program in 1990, and you're talking about me wearing many hats. I was at that moment interim general counsel for the Department of Public Instruction when that Milwaukee program started. And, you know, Burt Grover was state superintendent, and we blasted against it then. And now it's blossomed into this huge program. It's $444 million get taken out of the education budget to fund vouchers these days. That's a huge amount of money. I mean, that's real money. $444 million that get taken out of the pot for public schools to go to pay for individuals' private school tuition. And, you know, it's, well, let me just say that. Start there.
Okay. But it quickly builds, because there's more to it than that. It's not as if that $444 million were going entirely to students who are leaving their hometown public school to go to a private school. So much of this quote-unquote assistance is going to families whose kids were already in private schools, right?
Sure. About 75% of the kids who were paying tuition for have never been in a public school. I mean, they start in the private school system, and really the only thing that's changing is whether their parents pay tuition or whether their tuition comes out of the public school fund. That's it. And you were talking about taxpayer transparency. There are some locales where on their tax bill, they've gotten through local referenda and requests, they actually have on their tax bill how much is going to private schools from their from local taxpayers. It's not everywhere. We at the Wisconsin Public Education Network, we would love to see that kind of taxpayer transparency all the way across the state. But it is in a few places, like Eau Claire. In Eau Claire, you can actually see on your tax bill how much money is going to private schools as opposed to how much money is going to public schools right out of your local tax bill.
And I'm going to put on my former legislator hat and talk about the motive behind that is, you know, right now without that transparency, people are apt to look at their property tax bill and think that their local public school is getting and spending all this money when it is not the case. And so now there are proposals for a new dashboard, which again was a Republican idea to somehow make spending of tax dollars more accountable. But from the story we saw last week, when the Department of Public Instruction and an advisory committee said, all right, well, we're going to build that dashboard and it's going to have the cost of voucher schools built in. Suddenly legislators on the Joint Finance Committee last week were like, oh, hey, now back off, not so fast. And right now it doesn't look like that dashboard's going to happen anytime soon, does it?
You know, private schools have managed to not be regulated and not be transparent all of these years. And even when we're spending so much public money, we have no way to know how they spend that. We have no way to regulate those schools. They really aren't under DPI regulation. And the current legislature pushes to make them more and more unaccountable for anything that they do. So we spend, you know, for we spend over $8,000 a student on tuition through the private school voucher program, and yet there is no transparency whatsoever. This whole thing that you were talking about of having the dashboard, that's a great idea. That makes it more transparent. But boy, the legislature is not going to do that, even though it was their colleague's idea, as you point out.
Exactly. And again, to be fair, if there was some kind of volume of evidence about the superiority of these voucher schools, performing so much better, giving so much value. We heard all the time about competition and that public schools would benefit from competition. But you're the expert, so tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not seeing anything that indicates that, on the whole, that the voucher school program is delivering some kind of a superior education for all the tax money that's going into it. Although, to be truthful, we don't really know because of the apples and oranges data requirements of both systems, right?
Well, we don't really know. It is hard to tell because the private voucher schools and the private charter schools, independent charter schools, don't have to have kids take the same tests. To compare, as you say, apples to apples testing comparison, you can't do that easily. You can look at a number of other indicators. And, you know, Milton Friedman's idea about this voucher system was that it would improve public schools as well because of the competition. If that were true, Milwaukee would be, you know, so much better than it was in 1990. And we haven't seen that evidence. We have lots and lots of research comparing the private schools and public schools and the voucher schools and public schools. They don't show a lot of difference when kids go into the private sector. As a matter of fact, the one group of students that we see an improvement in is when kids leave the voucher program and go back to the public schools. And those kids, you do see a bump in their academic achievement. That may be because their parents are involved. We know that parents who are involved, you know, that's a great indicator of student success. And that's because, you know, parents are your first teachers and they're involved and they help with schoolwork and that kind of thing. So for those kids, we do see an increase in their academic achievement. But on the whole, we don't. You got a lot of research from think tanks, from private conservative think tanks that do some cherry picking and say that the private schools are better. But when you look at those research studies, they don't hold up.
And look, nobody is saying that the alternative is to not have any private schools or any religious schools. There will still be choice in Wisconsin. It's just a question of whether the taxpayers get a choice in paying for two school systems versus one. And so how do we kind of advance this debate? Obviously, with Republicans having control of the legislature, never mind the whole gerrymandered maps that led to it, it's not like anything's going to happen really soon. But what can people do to either learn more or to advocate more for their local public schools, talk to their legislators? What are the kinds of things that you hope people listening to this might do as a next step?
Well, it's important to remember that the legislature has a responsibility to fund public schools. And so they need to do that. As you say, right now there's funding two separate systems. And what people should do is contact their legislators and tell them that they don't want the state to be funding two separate systems, that we can't afford that, and that they need to abide by their constitutional obligation to fund public schools. You can also look at the Wisconsin Network.org. Which is the Public Education Network website. And there's a voucher toolkit there that you can use to talk to your friends and neighbors and your clubs. And it's all there, or letters to the editor. We've got a lot of templates and things there. You can you can get more information there and spread the word and talk to your legislators.
Sounds good. And Chris Hambuck Boyle, who we've had on the show before, put in a comment on Facebook thanking you as well for serving on the Blue Ribbon Commission. There's been no shortage of people looking for ways to make education stronger, not to dilute its strengths. And Julie, you've definitely been instrumental in that. Thank you so much. We appreciate getting to visit with you today.
Thanks so much.
And when we come back, we'll talk more about the cost of voucher schools, not just from the standpoint of dollars, but of dignity. Back after this, you're up north. It's her birthday today. She's 56. But at birth, you didn't know her as Macy Gray. She was born Natalie Renee McIntyre, born in Canton, Ohio. You now know her as Macy Gray. And again, she's 56 years old today. We're hoping to have a second guest on today to talk about the real cost of voucher schools and the way that voucher schools have a less than stellar record on topics like discriminating against people for either religious reasons or because of disabilities, or for a host of other reasons that even though they cannot discriminate when it comes to accepting students, the rules are much less stringent when they then are able to expel those students for one reason or another, having already received some of your state tax dollars for it. That was a case that was highlighted in Wisconsin Watch, the investigative news site, back in May, that talked about how state law prohibits public schools from discriminating against students on the basis of disability or sex or sexual orientation, but does not extend the same protections to private schools, even those that are receiving public funds. And Wisconsin Watch talked to some people, some of them anonymously, about how there were actions that were taken against students, sometimes for expressing themselves. One student from Fox Valley Lutheran talked about being punished because of, quote, the whole rainbow shirt thing, because they had expressed support for the LGBTQ community. But in the school, the principal had begun with a prayer asking, quote, their Heavenly Father to bless a meeting as they helped build the student up. And it was things like that that made some students and some parents uncomfortable when the voucher school program began. When the voucher school program began, there were these assurances that although the vast majority of voucher schools are religious, that they would not base a lot of their lessons in religious dogma, and that therefore it's okay for public dollars to go there. At least that's what the Wisconsin State Supreme Court said decades ago. Now there is a track record. And so as a result, there are people that are wanting to take another look at this. And now that the composition of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court has changed, there is quite likely going to be a challenge. We talked about it last weekend that the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC is working with Julie Underwood and others to potentially file a court challenge as early as next month over the entire voucher school program. Now, the lawsuit, of course, if successful, would not get rid of private schools, would not get rid of religious schools, but would certainly pare back something that was given significant public funds under a different set of circumstances and under a different set of promises, shall we say, than what we appear to be living with today. Understand that Martha, who is going to be one of our guests for this, may be calling in on the phone to talk a bit more about it. And if she does, we will put her up in short order if she calls in. But as I was unpacking some more of the headlines today, I also wanted to call attention to a news story about Wisconsin farmland. And you would think it would be really good news that Wisconsin farmland is continuing to become more valuable. But that's only if you think of it in terms of the family farm. if you look at it from the term of, you know, from the standpoint of a venture capital firm making investments in land, driving up the value, yes, but also driving up the price so that fewer families could create family farms on that land, then you get a different picture. And the story went up last week about how a venture capital firm was actually one of the sellers of farmland recently. It was an ag tech and farmland venture capital firm known as Fall Line Capital. And they sold off more than 7,000 acres of farmland spread across, you know, six counties, much of it in western Wisconsin. And you had prices that, well, all in all, that land sold for $46 million. And that's an average of $6,100 per acre. $6,000 per acre average. Some of it tillable farmland, some of it recreational ground, some of it, you know, used otherwise. But by and large, you're talking about farmland that has sold, you know, north of $7,000 an acre for some of these parcels. My concern about that is, as I mentioned, that not only can somebody not afford to buy farmland if they decide that agriculture is something they would like to pursue, they can't do it as a family farmer. They have to do it as an employee of some large corporate entity. And how far are we? Yes, go ahead and accuse me of being overly dramatic, but as I looked at these numbers per acre, I couldn't help but think of my ancestors in Europe, and I think many of yours as well, if you're of European lineage, who came to America because they were serfs. They farmed the land, but they could not own the land. They were working for the landowners who were taking an exorbitant amount, leaving these farm families with subsistence wages and barely enough food, and sometimes taking things further, places I hope we would never have to go again. For example, a feudal lord could say, well, instead of sending my son into the military, you can take the son of one of the people who's working my land. Now, that, of course, was way in the past, but I'm coming back to the larger issue of, are we seeing history repeat itself in terms of people who want to work the land no longer being able to afford the land and having to work not for themselves, but working for, you know, an individual, a very wealthy individual, or more likely, a venture capital firm that's out there that doesn't know them. I dare to say that, you know, there are plenty of investors out there that have never set foot in Wisconsin, have never actually picked up a handful of dirt and broken it up in their hands. They just see it as an item on their portfolio. And I don't know that there's an easy answer to this, but I know that when I think back of our discussion yesterday with Hans Breitenmoser about monopoly practices by corporations in the agriculture industry, doing nothing is not an option. And that, you know, there are things that good elected officials should consider in terms of putting limits on the market power of a corporation or a very wealthy individual to control a major percentage of the marketplace, whether it's for milk or corn or land. Because otherwise, we continue to exacerbate a cycle that is going to grow that divide between the extremely wealthy and the extremely not wealthy. And we see that continued in things like what's happening in the Wisconsin legislature right now, where the primary goal of the party controlling the legislature is to send as much of our tax dollars in that state budget surplus to the highest tax brackets. And if you missed it last week, you'll recall that the original Republican plan was to provide the lion's share of tax relief to the highest tax bracket. Governor Evers vetoed that part of it. The new Republican plan no longer provides most of the tax relief to the highest tax bracket. It provides a great deal of it to the second highest tax bracket. A very, very wide bracket that incorporates a whole lot of incomes, but still has a whole lot of people at the very top who are benefiting from what would be a Republican tax break. It's part of an editorial that I put up at upnorthnewswi.com about what kind of work are we going to get done this fall, both in Madison and in Washington. Are legislative Republicans ever going to be willing to meet Governor Evers halfway on a tax cut that is more geared toward the middle class, not the wealthiest tax brackets? Are legislators going to finally hear the voices of child care providers and parents and help provide some relief using this record budget surplus? Again, the signs aren't good, but Republican legislators do have the opportunity to get some work done. Similarly, in Congress, the House and Senate are coming back from their August recess over the next few days here, and there's a federal budget that has to get passed. And yet, the thing that's standing in the way of Republicans controlling the House from passing a budget is that too many in the far right say they won't support any kind of a stopgap measure or a budget itself until a vote is held to impeach President Joe Biden. That's the ridiculousness with which we find ourselves from people that we pay. We pay the salaries of these members of Congress. We pay the salaries of these legislators. And we ask only one thing of them. We ask them to work as hard as we do, to do good things for the most people possible, do good policy, be fair, be good listeners, compromise where you have to. We've all had to compromise in our places of work. And we should expect the same thing of our lawmakers. And yet, I don't know that the odds are going to be very high for that coming up this fall. Martha Saravo joins us now to talk a bit more about resuming our discussion about voucher schools. And, you know, the people who are advocating for folks who are targeted by privatization, and that includes people with varying physical abilities. And Martha, it's so nice to have you here. Thank you for joining us. My apologies if we got our wires crossed at all, but thanks so much for joining us today. We wanted to learn more about Madtown Mamas and disability advocates. So thanks for being a part of our quick discussion here.
I really appreciate the invite and being part of this. And for the patients, getting a school started is complicated, to say the least, every year.
It really is. And so we've only got a couple of minutes here, but we'll definitely pick up this conversation another time. But can you tell me, I know that you have been an advocate in public schools as well to make sure that there are programs and attention and everything else. But for the purposes of our discussion on private and voucher schools, what are the things that you're most mindful of and advocating for on behalf of students with disabilities?
There's a lot of times where when we're helping families at the private and the voucher schools, there tends to be a limited amount of access a lot where there's only certain services that these kiddos are getting. So if they are higher needs, or if maybe the school is saying that we have enough staff here, well, is it the appropriate staff? And how are we meeting those needs? Are we just simply having another body in the room? And how well is the student overall connecting with everybody? And part of the things that we focus on as a group is I'm actually one of the people in the group that does a little bit more of the local help with parents. And when we do that, we not only just sit down and discuss things with them, we'll tend to IEPs with them so we can literally break through the content and actually decide what are we doing right? How can we do things better? But again, it's like sometimes with certain schools, you only get specific services. And then there's nothing you can do about that except consider switching to another school. And that gets really frustrating because that's a lot for a child to go through. And especially you have to experience all the disparities before you even think about going in that direction. And then oftentimes this is done when they're younger, which is even more vulnerable spot.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Martha, I want to hear much more about this. This is something that we're going to continue to keep a focus on. So we're going to look for a date to have you back and explore this in a lot more depth, not just from a voucher school standpoint, but what public education districts should be doing as well. Martha, again, I really appreciate getting to visit with you very briefly, and we'll do it again very soon.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for doing that.
You bet, Martha. Have a great day. When we come back, Todd Alba of the Todd Alba Show will tell us what to expect across the Civic Media Radio Network this afternoon between 1 and 3. Back after this, you're up north. That's not me. That would be Todd Alba. Those of you watching the live video feed right now of our radio show are looking at an empty studio in Madison, Wisconsin, where Todd Alba would normally be sharing his dulcet tones with us. But you'll recall that last week, Todd was having issues with Spectrum, with the cable company, with an internet connection. And it's fair to say things have not gone well since. Because, that studio's still empty. Todd's allegedly on the phone, stuck in traffic because his internet connection is such that he decided to drive into the studio, but he's not here yet. Todd, are you on the phone now?
Ha! Ha!
Oh, wait a minute. We go live to our studio in Madison.
Ha! I've
where
made it.
I think he's either laughing or having seizures because he's so sick of dealing with the cable company. Todd Alba, a breathless Todd Alba.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. Patrick.
Look at Mathers
yeah,
behind
Mathers
you.
Back there. Yeah, he's chilling out.
He's genuinely worried about you. He's wondering if there's an AED somewhere in
right.
there.
Right.
He's also just confused because Todd's normally not here this early.
No, right. Heavens no.
But as you know, we had an issue, or Todd had an issue, with Spectrum.
Yeah.
And since that time, Spectrum and Disney have had a disagreement to the
yes.
point that we don't get the ESPN channels on our cable system anymore. I'm now thinking, Todd Alba, are you the one that broke... Did you break Spectrum? Are you responsible for this ESPN mess?
I seem to broke everything else, so it wouldn't surprise me, no. Good morning, Pat. Yes, dissatisfied Spectrum. Dissatisfied is a kind word. There are things we can't use in morning radio, so I'll leave it at that. The quick version is I'm now on Spectrum Guy number 8. Three trips to the Spectrum office, and without exaggeration, now over 5 hours on the phone combined. And after moving apartments over 2 months ago, I still don't have the channels of the Spectrum service. And of course, yes, Disney and Charter or Spectrum can't come to an agreement on carrying the Disney channels, namely ESPN. So they pulled those. And I still had decent internet until this morning, when apparently now Spectrum has completely pulled my entire service because I haven't paid for the last 2 months. When I'm not getting the service. At one of the calls, this very nice lady said, oh, I'll put it on your account not to pull your service until we get this resolved. This is just terrible. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you going to put it on the – yes, I'll put it on Mr. Alba. I'll put it on the – well, apparently it didn't happen.
Apparently not, because yeah. you're having to quickly jump into the Fred Flintstone mobile there
yeah,
and get
exactly.
your feet kicking
and
then, get over
here. You know, Mayor Sriracha Sauce Conway, I mean, she absolutely doesn't even want anybody with a vehicle to get around this city anymore. So she's torn up every frickin' street, and it takes 2 hours to get a mile around here. I'm all for transportation for, you know, buses and I want a monorail, I want a train. But she has made it so unless you ride a bike, you know, she thinks that I guess we all make $95,000 a year working for Epic and live in a luxury apartment and can walk to work, which is nice for a lot of people, but it's not representative of most Madisonians, Pat.
Yes, Todd Alba is a little hot-blooded. I was going to do the Empire theme from Star Wars, but either way... Sounds like a guy that would like to aim the beam of the Death Star right at Spectrum and maybe Madison City Hall just as collateral damage.
Let's aim it where it needs to go, and that's Republicans in the state legislature a block away because they're getting ready to pull a fast one and try to impeach Justice Jana Protasiewicz before she's even taken the bench. And today, we're going to start off with you, and we're going to have Trygve Olson from the Lincoln Project, and we're going to expose these idiots up at the Capitol for what they really are, which is a bunch of scum.
Todd Alba is worked up.
I am worked up.
I wish it was 1 o'clock now.
You know what I need? I need a 3-day week with the girls. I need a girls' trip so I could just play 3 days of repeats. But, you know, we can't do that anymore. So, you know, that's what I really need.
I want to know who these girls are that you're traveling with. Yeah, was that just metaphorical, or did you actually have a girl squad that you're willing to go to Vegas with or something?
No. I really, what I need is a Gilbert burger, but I can't even talk about that anymore. So, you know, there's just a lot of constrictions around here now.
Todd, this is just sad. I mean, normally we look forward to these Wednesdays.
I'm going to take you up on this. I'm going to bring it because I got to get out of town. That's what I need. I'm going to come up to Lake Wissota, or at least Chippewa Valley. And I are going to do a show together at the beautiful farmer's market in downtown Eau Claire with our station up there, the Tap. And then I'm going to take you up. I'll bring the beer. You bring the pontoon boat. And we're just going to spend an afternoon in the lake.
I was going to say, the strike is over. I can get you lineys up here just fine.
I have your water bottle after you turn.
Yes, I know. I just don't get to Madison that often to reclaim some lost items.
Although, Spectrum, I deliver.
I'm a little concerned you won't be able to get out of town. It sounds like the Hotel California there. You can check out of Madison anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Nope, can't get back.
By the way, just to add one more wrinkle, it's when you're in the biggest hurry to get in or out of town that a train comes through, right through the middle of town.
And I live right next to the tracks on John Nolan, so that would have been exactly what should have happened.
That would have been the cherry on top, wouldn't it?
But no, there was no train.
No, we would love to have you up here. How was your Labor Day weekend? We talked to Melissa Kay last hour from WFHR, and her whole family was sick, so it wasn't enjoyable. I hope yours was a little more enjoyable.
It was okay. Was in Richland Center, delivered some stuff to our station up there, and popped in and saw Mom, who's recovering from knee surgery. Thank you very much. She's in Boca Raton now. No, not really. She's just in Richland Center. And then as you know, I moved about 2 months ago, and I haven't had time to really unpack, so I just sequestered myself in air conditioning and rearranged my pantry. That was my exciting single-life Labor Day.
Rearranging your pantry?
Yeah.
I can't really fault you that, though, because my wife always accuses me of the thing that I like to do most is organize and reorganize, and so I will take a project in the room and basically... It's like moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic. I just happen to think the deck chairs now look better by the time I've done that.
Right, exactly.
So
you're a smart man, Pat Kretlow.
Well, and it was really hot. I mean,
it was hot.
As much as you were worked up and steamed, I'm sure you were very steamed. But didn't you still notice how much better it felt out there this morning?
It was a lovely morning. In fact, that's exactly what I'm going to do after I get off of here. I'm going to go take a walk by the lake, beautiful down here on Lake Monona, and grab a coffee. And
I was going to say you're going to stop at Wonder State. You're going to grab a little
Wonder
coffee.
Wonder State, one of my favorite coffee places here, located in Viroqua, Wisconsin, a all solar roastery. Speaking of environmentally friendly, doing it the right way, Wonder State Coffee.
Did you say an all-solar roastery?
I believe one of only five in the world that have an all-solar coffee roastery in Viroqua, Wisconsin, Wonder State. And they have a coffee house up in Bayfield, Wisconsin, way up north.
Oh, okay. Well, now I've got something to check out when I head up to visit Dan Schumacher up north there.
There you go.
All right, buddy. Feel better soon. I'll talk to you at 1 o'clock when you get your show going.
You guys are fantastic. See ya.
All right. Take care there, buddy.
Oh, there's Luke Mathers.
Oh, boy. I think this would be a good time for me to remind you that Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier Newsroom, a separate entity from Civic Media, but we love partnering with them. And you can stay up to date with our newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow me on social media throughout the day, and I'll see you back here bright and early, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning on a Thursday as we head through this holiday-shortened week. An angry week for Todd Alba, but the rest of us, put a smile on your face and have a great day.